Every lap in under a minute means every second matters. Bosch Power Tools Perth Super Sprint, May 17 to 19. Book now at Ticketek. Supercars, unforgettable.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
A Motorsport Podcast Network production.
Hey everyone, great to have you along with me for another week. Aaron Noonan here. This is the V8 Sleuth Podcast, powered by Castrol 2024. Now these days, Garth Tander drives a microphone more than he drives a race car, which is quite the change from when he was last with us on this pod in 2019. That's when we last sat down with him, which it's scary to think that so much time has gone so quickly. So we thought it's time to chat with GT again about what's happened since then, but also some more tales from his career in Australian motorsport. Now we delve into some current topics of which he hasn't held back his opinion on, plus some fun tales from his time in Formula Ford, his time with Gary Rogers' team, and his time with Triple Eight. But before we start, I need you to do me a favour. Every Tuesday, the Motorsport News Podcast goes live, and you can get it on the platform where you're listening to this pod. Just search for it, subscribe to both pods via your favourite podcast app, so you get notified whenever a new episode goes live. We've also added this year the Brad Jones Racing Rundown Pod to our MN Pod offering, and the Special Stages Rally Sport Magazine Podcast for all the latest on the dirt. Part of our commitment at the Motorsport Podcast Network to giving you more motorsport in your ears more often. Right, let's get cracking. Garth Tander, part one, recorded recently at Grove Racing headquarters in Braeside, Melbourne. Enjoy this episode. It's the V8 Sleuth Podcast, powered by Castrol.
Garth Tander, hello. Well, actually, no. Welcome back to the V8 Sleuth Podcast. It has been a little while between drinks, 5 years. Between us.
5 years. Oh, well, firstly, thank you for having me back on the V8 Sleuth Podcast. And 5 years, does that now elevate me to like, you know, like when race cars get to a certain age, they become historic? So does that mean I'm now historic in the Sleuth archives?
Oh, I think you're getting there. I'm not prepared to say that you are, but I think you're on the way.
You sound like my children.
Yeah. I'm not sure that's the destination you want to be getting to, but I think you're getting there regardless. Yes. But
we all are.
Yes,
we
yes. All are. When I look back, you were with us in year one of the V8 Sleuth Podcast.
Oh, was I?
We're up to year six.
Well, there you go. That does do then now get classified as a story.
Yeah, does age you a little bit. It was September 2019. And it's fair to say a lot's changed in your world since then. Personally, professionally, there's been a lot happened in the last 4 or 5 years. When we were on the pod last, we were focusing on Bathurst factory history because it was the 50th anniversary of Holden's. Mm. Ironically, it wasn't official at the time in 1969, the Holden dealer team, but it really was. Mm. So much has changed. I mean, we are sitting at Grove Racing that in 2019 was still Kelly Racing running Nissans.
Yeah.
There's no way back then you could have comprehended that you would be here.
Oh, no, definitely not. Even in 2019, it was my first year at Triple Eight. I'd only just left the series full time. Hadn't even started with Supercars Media at that stage. I was working with Channel 10 and RPM, which no longer is around.
Killed that off too.
Well, yeah.
That's gone as well.
I felt like Roundup for a while there. There was a few things getting killed off that I was around at. So, lots changed since then. But back to your initial statement/question. No, at no stage in September 19 did I think we'd be sitting in Braeside in early 2024 discussing Grove Racing.
Grove Racing was a Porsche team at the time. It wasn't, those guys weren't involved in supercars as a.
Well, Brenton, ironically, if you go back to then, I was working with Brenton. Because he was driving in the Super 2 Championship at Triple Eight in one of the Triple Eight Super 2 cars. And I was working with Brenton, and Lounsey was working with Kurt Kostecki. So we were sort of mentors for the Super 2 program. And I got assigned to Brenton. So although we weren't talking about Grove Racing back in 2019, I guess you can say the very foundation of me sitting here was actually happening back then.
So one thing I don't think we covered off was that it really shocked everyone at the start of 19 when that news came through that you weren't going to be with GRM. So you didn't – I was thinking about this the other day. You didn't get what so many other drivers got, was that – knowledge and knowing that you were doing your final full-time round. So you didn't get the chance to...
I didn't get the Lounsey parade.
No, you didn't get the Lounsey parade or, you know, the ute ride around and wave. But you didn't get a chance to have that moment where your friends, your family, the people who helped you over the years to get you where you've got to could have that opportunity to know that that's the last time that you're going to have your name on a car by itself. Although Shane did try at Sandown a few years later to give you that opportunity. Did that irk you? Does it still irk you?
Yeah, no, that's what pissed me off the most, absolutely, was that I wasn't able to, you know, at the final round of my full-time championship, hire a corporate box above pit lane and get 20, 30, 50, 100 of whatever the number is of the people that were important to me there and then, but also more importantly along the journey that helped me achieve having a career in motorsport on a full-time basis. So that's what really, you know, pissed me off, that I didn't get that opportunity, and that opportunity was not not that you deserve that opportunity, but I wasn't able. I feel like I'd been in the sport long enough full-time, and particularly with the team in question, had done enough with them over the journey that there'd be a bit more respect to be able to achieve that somehow. But I didn't and wouldn't have been interested in the Lounsey parade and standing in the back of the ute or walking up pit lane and shaking everyone's hand. That's not my style.
What about a Golden Commodore?
Yeah, no, none of that. No. None of that. Ironically, if I was at GRM and they found that there was a way to commercialise it, make a buck off it, they probably would have done it. But no, it was more about being able to say thank you to the people that supported me through my journey. I wasn't able to do that. That's what pissed me the most, really did, and still does to this day. But I can't change that. Fortunately, I've had a really – nowadays I can't ask to be in a better position than I am within the motorsport world. So at this stage of my life. So, you know, although that sucked, you know, as things have turned out, it hasn't worked out so bad.
And that's where I was going with it next, that if you look at what's happened since – it opened up the Triple Eight opportunity, a couple of Bathurst wins, now here at Groves, all the things that have happened along the way. Had you been at GRM for another year, they only stayed in supercars for one more year. So who knows what your path, you might have ended up at the same place a bit later. The path would be different somewhere, somehow. So in a way, knowing what you know now that's unfolded in the last 5 years, you wouldn't be able to see at the time. But I mean, worked out pretty well.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, early January 2019, sitting in the office at GRM, once I was told that I wasn't driving full time that year, and as it turned out, anymore.
So you had no idea?
I had no idea. I walked in completely blindsided into that meeting.
It was like pre-Christmas. Very early 19.
January 5, 6, 7, 8, around there. I can't remember exactly. So whilst very early in the year, very late in the deal to be able to put anything together full time for 2019. And look, to be honest, I'd got to the stage of my career that I was driving at GRM for 2 years, probably was only going to drive 2019 full time and then move into running the show at GRM. That was always the plan from when I signed there at the end of 2016, was to drive for a couple of years. And then at some stage transition into running the organization for Gary. At no stage when all that changed did I think, I'm going to end up at Triple Eight driving at Bathurst that year. No, I didn't think that. It was the first phone call I made to Roland, because I knew, actually, it happened on a Wednesday or Thursday at GRM, and I knew that Triple Eight were launching that weekend, that Saturday or Sunday. I don't know why I knew that, but I knew that. Might have been through Shane. And I knew that Triple Eight always announced their co-drivers at their season launch.
Yeah, they don't hold them back. They bowl them out at the same time.
So I was like, well, if there's any opportunity, I need to make this phone call before they announce. So I think that afternoon I rang Roland. We made contact with Roland, and I think we'd done a deal the next day. So,
is it the fastest deal you've ever done?
Fastest, easiest deal I've ever done in motorsport ever. Mm. So it was just, I think I can't even remember how it went, but it was.
It was so quick you probably don't remember.
It was. What do you think? This has just happened. What opportunities do you have for endurance driving? And he's like, give me 24 hours. And I think it was done within 12.
Done and dusted. Just flicking, because you flicked the co-driver mode from there on, there's a topic I wanted to ask you about. So we've got a rule change this year.
Yeah.
With the rule is that the primaries have to start the race at the St. Anna Bathurst, that is. My initial feeling is that we're punching at shadows that don't exist here. What's your take on this rule change that means that you definitely know that you'll be standing in the pit lane at the start of those races?
I'm a massive sports fan. Mm-hmm. I like watching a lot of other sport. I watch a lot of cricket. I watch some AFL, probably not as much these days. I watch a lot of basketball.
Because West Coast are not going so well.
Well, because West Coast are going terribly.
I thought so.
I watch a lot of basketball because my kids love basketball.
Are you a Perth Wildcats fan?
I was a Perth Wildcats fan growing up, but we watch a lot of NBA now because that's what all the cool kids do.
Right. I remember that from the 90s when I was a kid.
Yeah, so do I. We used to watch it on that Saturday morning show, but now they're streaming and all the rest of it, so you can watch it live. the ICC... prior to the Ashes, don't dictate to England or Australia what the batting order is going to be, nor do they dictate who's going to bowl first, as in within the team. Mm. The NBA don't dictate to the Chicago Bulls who the starting five are. The team makes that decision. So why supercars in an age of our game where there's a lot of criticism that the racing is follow the leader.
Predictable.
And that a lot of the strategy is copy. Why they would make a rule that takes out some of the flexibility that the teams have, I have no idea. And some are saying because of the start at Bathurst in 2022 that they needed to protect the teams from danger at the start of these races. Well, the rule wasn't that you had to start your co-driver.
No.
So the teams didn't have to start the co-driver. No. If they felt that it was dangerous and there was some risk involved, put your primary driver in. So I don't get it. I honestly don't get it. It doesn't make any sense to me at all. And people will say, oh, Garth's just saying that because now he's a co-driver. But I'm trying to look at it from a sports fan perspective. Could you imagine if the ICC dictated that Michael Clarke wasn't allowed to be an opener at the Ashes at the MCG on Boxing Day? Imagine if that was a rule. Mm. Could you imagine the backlash?
It's got that feeling of...
Not Michael Clarke, Michael Smith.
Steve Smith.
Steve Smith.
Yeah, I knew where you were going.
I do watch cricket.
Yeah, yeah, bowls a little bit. Yeah. The element that I struggle with it all is... there's a lot bigger stuff that, as a sport, as a category, as an entertainment organisation, that needs to be going on. So whether it's the pit lane order, or it's this thing, or it's
I'll try and stay away from that. But we have a rule in a lot of our refueling races that there's a mandatory fuel drop. Now that rule existed when there was Nissan engines in the category, the Mercs, the Volvos, as well as the Ford and the GM engines, which are now different to what they were when this rule came in. So that rule existed for engines, five different engines back then, back in the 2014 era. We brought in fuel drop. We don't need fuel drop anymore. So because it actually has worked out that the Ford engine and the Chev engine are actually very, very, very similar on fuel economy. It's one of the very few things that they are very similar on is their fuel economy. And we learnt that over the last year with Gen 3. So why wouldn't we get rid of a rule that is in, and I work in pit lane during the refueling races, that is insanely difficult to convey to the fans at home that are watching on TV, let alone the fans that are in the grandstands at the racetrack.
And try doing it on radio where people can't see anything.
So why don't we eliminate that rule and focus on our energy on getting that right, as opposed to bringing in some ticky-tack rule about whether co-drivers can start two races of the year. I work for supercars in the broadcast sphere. I understand that there's a lot of challenges in the supercars world. But I think sometimes we could save ourselves from a few own goals, and that was one of them.
You just read my mind on exactly the line I was going to use. You just stole it. I was going to say own goals. I was going to say goals. Anyway, let's fast forward back to the Triple H stuff. Obviously, when we last did this, you were a three-time Bathurst 1000 winner. You are now a five-time Bathurst 1000 winner. What's different about being five-time than three-time?
When you win three, you hold three fingers up. When you win five, you hold five up.
It's four fingers and a thumb. Come on.
Well, that's very... obviously... I think when you're a one-time Bathurst winner, it's special. So I feel incredibly fortunate to have had success there in the supercars race five times. And as you know, Aaron, I'm a keen follower of the history of the sport. And when you elevate from three-time winner to five-time winner, there's a lot less people in front of you that have achieved what you've achieved. So I feel very proud and very honoured to be sitting on that list as a one-time winner, let alone a five-time winner. So, it's very, very special. And it doesn't diminish in any way, shape or form whether you've won one, two or five Bathursts, how special it is.
Every lap in under a minute means every second matters. Bosch Power Tools Perth Super Sprint, May 17 to 19. Book now at Ticketek. Supercars, unforgettable.
How's it different when you're the co-driver versus the main primary as you were in? I mean, you've sort of done it in all the combos. The Bargs one and the Will Davo one where you're both full-timers when the rules allowed it, and that's a whole other topic. And while we're at it, if we're going to undo a rule, let's undo that one while we're at it. That's another one for another day. Then you've got the Nick Percat thing where we're into the co-driver era. You're the lead, he's the co, and then you're the co for Shane for a couple of years there in 20 and 22. So they've all got different kind of elements to them there, but I guess it doesn't change. I mean, it doesn't change the fact that you won the race. You hold the trophy, but the contribution that you make, the role that you play is different. How does that sit with you as a Bathurst winner in that position rather than being Garth Tander wins Bathurst on the national headlines and it's Shane winning, by the way. Look, but you played such a critical role.
Yeah, look, that is true. And that was something I was very mindful of when I was the primary driver, for lack of a better term, if you like, that particularly with Nick, for example, that it wasn't Garth Tander wins Bathurst with Nick Percat, it's Garth Tander and Nick Percat win Bathurst. And I was always very mindful of that. No doubt when you are Shane Van Gisbergen and Garth Tander wins Bathurst, it's different, no doubt about it. But Shane was fantastic about it. Like, he wouldn't even do an interview at the end of each of the races until I'd got to the car. So there's some vision there where Jess is trying to interview him. He goes, "Well, I don't really want to talk until Garth gets here." So that was very nice. And
that stuff's probably been overlooked over the journey.
Yeah, too. Look, I think the first time in 20, it definitely felt strange. Like Shane was in the car a lot more than I was. I sort of didn't feel like I contributed a whole lot to that one during the race. I mean, I did a lot of work in the lead up to the race, car setup wise and all the rest of it. But in the actual race, Shane did a lot of the heavy lifting in 2020. But 22, I definitely felt like I contributed as much. I think we pretty much did the same amount of laps. There was only probably five or ten laps in it as to how many laps each of us did during the race. Clearly, Shane was in the car at the end of the race. That's his job. Mm. And I was in the car at the start of the race, and that was my job, but not anymore.
And the other thing was that 20 was the COVID year.
Yeah, it was.
So it just had all these other elements that you will never, hopefully, well, fingers crossed, ever
experience. 20 was strange because it took me 5 weeks to win Bathurst because I had to go and quarantine for 2 weeks.
You went to Darwin, didn't you?
I went to Darwin and quarantined for 2 weeks.
It makes a road trip to Bathurst now look pretty easy, doesn't it?
It's easy to get to Bathurst. It's only 7 hours in the car nowadays. It was 5 weeks to get there. So in 2020, I went to Darwin for 2 weeks to quarantine. I had James Golding as my neighbour when we were in quarantine.
Were you in little huts, weren't you?
We were in effectively mining accommodation that we make here at Grove, actually.
Nice.
Just get a plug in. And Biebs and I worked out very quickly. So we were on the same flight, and I think we'd already sort of worked out that we were going to do the same sort of thing. So we're on the same flight, so that means you get huddled onto a bus together, and when they were sort of checking us in, I worked out pretty quickly that if we checked in together, we'd be pretty close to each other in the suburbs of the accommodation. So it worked out that we got this sort of duplex hut, and I was in one side and Biebs was in the other, and we're allowed to be out on your balcony and talk to each other and all the rest of it. So not only did I have James Golding as a teammate for a couple of years, I had him as my neighbour for the 2 weeks leading up to Bathurst, and we spent a lot of time watching old Bathurst Vision, and he was like, oh, what did you do here? And he was actually quite studious. He had all the information. So I was watching over his shoulder. And so 2 weeks in Darwin. Then I just spent a week in Brisbane with the team. I was about a week and a half, the way it worked out, with the team, because I hadn't seen them all year because I was...
Because that was the way you had to get into...
That's the way I had to get... Well, that was the
you
way...
To get to New, you could go from Queensland to New South Wales, but you had to get into Queensland.
Yeah, I had to get into Queensland. It was more difficult to get into Queensland. So that was the Darwin thing. Roland gave me the choice. He said, you can go to Darwin for 2 weeks or you can go to Sydney in a hotel room for 2 weeks. And I said, I'll go to Darwin. Thank you very much. And it was. I turned it into a training camp while we were there. So that was good. Spent a week in Brisbane, week and a half or so in Brisbane, a week in Bathurst, and then I think I got home the following Tuesday. So it was 5 weeks that week to go to Bathurst, which, you know, sounds like a lot, but you got to remember that year, the teams themselves were on the road and away for months. Yeah. So whilst I spent 5 weeks to do one race, a lot of the teams spent a lot of time on the road away from family for a long period of time. So strange times.
Mm, very strange. Hopefully we never get back to that sort of stuff ever again. 22.
Yep.
I think probably everyone harks straight to the Shane's after party efforts for Monday morning.
That's true.
Is that the worst you've ever seen a Bathurst winner, or not worst, but the hardest you've seen a Bathurst winner celebrate? And you've celebrated a few.
I don't feel like we actually celebrated that hard that night. He just was very average on the drink the next day. So that's not the worst I've seen Shane. But it's funny.
And for those who don't remember, Garth and Shane appeared. Was it on the Today Show?
Channel 9? We did Today Show first.
Monday morning
with
after the win.
With Carl first.
And Shane was he was not in a good way. He had to excuse himself and depart.
So we...
what did we see? What did we not see?
What you didn't see was I got to Shane. We were staying in separate accommodation, separate houses. I got to Shane. So they picked me up first. Mitch McAvoy, the team PR man, picked me up first and said, right, we got to go get Shane. So I went to get Shane. And look, I was not great.
Dusty?
I was dusty.
Okay.
But I soon learnt that I was far better than Shane was. So I got to him, and this is very early days in Shane and Jess Dane's relationship. And Jess is like, can you go and sort him out because he will not listen to me at all? Firstly, I walk into the house and I can hear someone whacking Shane. And it's Jess has got this huge book, it's like an atlas or something like that, and she's belting him over the head trying to get him to do things because he's just like useless. He's like, I can't find my left, I can't find my socks. If I don't have my socks, I can't walk. Like, and I'm like, oh. And Jess is like, can you try and get him to do stuff? He listens to you sometimes. So I'm like, dude, don't worry about your socks. Don't just, mate, just put your shoes on. Don't worry about your socks. He goes, no, I need my socks. If I don't have my socks, I won't be able to walk. And I'm like, man, it's 6:45 and we're on air at 7:15. We're not going to be able to do this. Like, this is not going to work. So, dude, just grab your shoes. I'll find you some socks. Get in the car. No, I've got to put my socks on. I said, just get in the car. So he does get in the car and we put some socks on him. I can't remember. And we get to the track and it's like 7:05. And man, he cannot string two words together. And I'm like, okay. And so we get there and Paul Glover from Supercars has got, and to his credit, he's got like the full beforehand. I don't know if Jess had messaged ahead of time, but he's got Baroccas, he's got Nurofens, he's got Powerades, he's got water, he's got like the full hangover recovery kit ready to go when we lob there. And I'm like, give him a Barocca. But Glover's like, yeah, we're doing it, but we're doing it upstairs, like on top of the pit pavilion. I'm like, dude, we can't get him upstairs. Like, there's no way.
It's hard
way.
Enough just to get him here.
He's not even walking. How are we going to get him upstairs?
Because he doesn't have socks.
So anyway, we get upstairs and he sort of, to Shane's credit, he does get his act together a little bit and he can at least stand without swaying. And then, and I think I'd said to Carl, off before we'd gone live, I said, Shane's feeling a bit under the weather here. I'm not sure how good he's going to be. And then Shane's just rolled out. And so we've gone live and Carl's welcomed us and, oh, great to speak to the reigning Bathurst champions. That's when Shane's like rolled out that line. What was it? It was, I just want everyone to know that I was actually here and then walked off.
Yeah.
Because, and the reason he does that, some of the people might not realize, it's actually it's in the sup regs. It's actually part of the race meeting. It's a rule that you have to show up for this thing.
Yeah. So otherwise, you could be fined.
You can be fined. You blah blah blah. So old mate's giving it. I just want everyone to know I was here and walked off on live TV in the morning, and left me to pick up the pieces. So it was fun, and thankfully Carl, who's probably post Logies, has probably been on air a little bit under the weather himself over the journey. Yeah. It was a lot of fun and was great. So I had to do the live cross without Shane, which was quite difficult because Shane was let's just say fertilizing some pot plants just off camera. Just out of eyeshot, but within earshot.
Yes.
Which was made it difficult.
So yeah, there's always memorable elements. Yeah, yeah, to no, that's wins, that's, and I think that's the one everyone still that's, will that's, pull to.
Anyone talks about, did you have any wild after parties after winning Bathurst? Whilst the after party itself wasn't overly wild, the morning after was pretty funny.
What was your biggest celebration of a race win? Was it a Bathurst? Was it the championship? What meant the most that you transferred into celebration / hangover?
No.
It's pretty hard to because there's another race a couple of weeks later, or there's another function.
You don't remember them because if they were any good, you wouldn't remember it. No, generally I was usually pretty good. I was able to not get myself into a situation that I was too far out of control the next day.
That I recall.
No doubt some of the guys within some of the race teams that I was part of will have some stories, but I don't recall.
They're not on the podcast. Yeah, so that's
right.
That's okay. So four Bathurst starts with 888 and with Shane.
Yep.
Two wins.
Yep.
A second.
Yeah,
and running second tie goes with a couple laps to go in 21. Mm. So, plus Gold Coast stuff, plus Sandown, there were, you know, other races that you guys were together for, but Bathurst is the focal element. So I think a lot of people went, "Huh?" when you left 888 at the end of 22. Was it a case of 888 losing Garth Tander or Grove Racing winning Garth Tander?
Wow, that's a question for probably the two race teams to answer. I think if you look at it, I had, there was an offer on the table to go to Triple Eight and drive again with Shane. And then there was an offer come in to come to Grove. So whilst I was nutting out the nuts and bolts of what the Triple Eight offer would look like, the Grove offer continued to get more attractive. And look, I read some commentary that I only came to Grove for money, or I came to Grove because they put Sebastian in their junior driver academy, or whatever. Not a lot of people were privy to what I was privy to from the Groves about where they wanted to go with the business and where they wanted to go with the race team. And 12 months later, it's probably a bit more evident as to why I moved from Triple Eight to Grove. I knew that realistically, I sort of knew, not officially, but I knew that probably only had one more year left with Shane anyway. I sort of just mates talking over the journey, I just got this feeling that...
With him as a mate, you mean, or with other mates?
No, with him, yeah, him as a mate. And I, you know, it's not like he said to me, "Oh, I'm going to NASCAR in 24." So, but I just sort of started to get the inkling that, yeah, I think there's the future of this is as it is right now is probably limited. So when the opportunity to came up to be part of helping to grow something with Grove, and to be more involved with the direction of the business was attractive. So as it turned out, I would have got one more crack with Shane if I signed on. Shane won with Richie, which is, you know, obviously for Shane and Richie, great. But do I regret missing out on that last year at Triple Eight and going to Groves? No.
I get the sense that what you've been able to come and do here, and we're sitting at Grove Racing, by the way, if you're just tuning in now.
Yeah, I gave you a workshop tour.
You gave me a great tour. I mean, I was saying to you before we hit the record button that I haven't been in this building since 2019. And at the time it was Kelly Racing, still running Nissans in their last year. I think we were here with Rusty and some others to do the TCR television announcement when I did television. That's how long ago it was. And the building's completely changed inside. It's been completely gutted and rebuilt. It's such an impressive place here. So I get the feeling, and you know, tell me how much of this is right, that what you hoped and thought you were going to be at GRM, you kind of can be here, have an effect post-driving, you know, co-drive for a bit and then transition into a management style position.
Yeah, I think that's probably, to be honest, I haven't actually thought about it in that regard, but I think you're right. I think I've always been very interested in being involved with a race team. You know, there was a period there where I wanted to have my own race team and potentially one day maybe be a supercar team, but that didn't turn out to be realistic. But I feel like I've always had something to offer a race team from a strategic direction point of view, obviously from a mentoring point of view, and I know I'm still fortunate to be able to offer something from a driving perspective as well. So to be able to do that with Stephen and Brent and Grove was an offer that was too good to turn down. And you know, I'm you know, like you say, we're sitting here in this facility now. That when they show me the plans for what they were going to do here in Braeside, I was like, well, man, if you guys do half of what is on these plans, then it's going to be the best facility in Australia. And we did probably three quarters to nearly 9/10 of what was on the plans. And yeah, it's turned out pretty cool. And you know, facilities, I told you before we started recording, workshops and facilities don't win races, but it shows intent and commitment. And, you know, the Groves were prepared to commit and to spending a serious amount of coin to turn this facility into potentially the best race facility in Australia. So that's a fair statement of intent for me.
No, serious. And it's ongoing too. It's not just
we're not
build
done.
It and then
no, we're not done.
Leave it. It needs ongoing, you know.
Yeah. No, actually the real work starts now.
Yeah.
Do you know how to find the right oil for your car? Now you can find out quickly and easily online, thanks to Castrol's Rego to Oil tool. Simply type in your Rego, select your state, and within seconds you'll know the best Castrol products to unlock the edge of performance in your car. So what's your car best suited to? Just search Rego, the number 2, and oil, and find out.
Apart from co-driving the supercar a couple of times a year, are you hungry to try to do more racing? Have you enjoyed the GT stuff? You had a little dabble in Carrera Cup last year. Clearly, you want to do as much as you can so as you're sharp for those races later in the year, or as sharp as you can be. Are you actively chasing that stuff? Nope. Is it important? Does it matter?
No, I don't actively chase it. Simply because Aaron, I raced professionally for 22 years. And I have done a lot of racing in that over that journey. I do feel that I do need to do some racing through the year to be match fit by the time Sandown comes around. But do I need to do 10 race meetings a year? No. Do I need to do 8 race meetings? No. 6? No. I'll probably do a couple of extracurricular races this year, but that's enough. I mean, I drive the supercar every test day. I drive the supercar every ride day. I'm fortunate that I have a huge amount of muscle memory built up over a long period of time that I don't need to do 10 extra race meetings before Sandown and Bathurst. If I was 21, yeah, that's a different story.
Yeah.
But no, I don't. So I'll do a couple of extra races this year. But I'm not actively out there chasing to race every weekend. And to be honest, Aaron, I don't have the time. My kids race go-karts and I'm usually at a kart track every weekend that I'm not at a supercars weekend doing TV. I'm fortunate I don't have to, but I do very much enjoy the extra racing that I do.
Yeah. Short of driving an actual supercar, what is the best preparation for? I mean, there's a lot of different categories and cars out there that you can pick to have your couple of goes in a year, but which of them actually is the most meaningful, helpful? Because there's a lot that you sort of instantly go, ugh, that doesn't really compare to what you're going to do later in the year, but is that as important a factor?
Look, I don't think there's anything that's... I mean, you could argue that even Super 2 is not really relevant because those cars have got way more downforce than what a Gen 3 car's got now. But it is a supercar. It is racing at supercar tracks. It's racing on the Dunlop tyre. Is it worth me racing in Super 2? Probably not. I actually thought racing Carrera Cup last year was pretty good for me because the competition is very intense. They're a very skill-specific category to drive, as in the Porsche requires a very specific driving style, which actually for me forced me to really concentrate and really focus on my driving. Whereas if I jump in the supercar, and even the Gen 3 car, I can jump in that and my supercar technique works. So I had to really think about it. They've got short races and then they've got the long race as well. So you had to manage the tyre over the journey. So I actually really enjoyed the Porsche, that one Carrera Cup race that I did last year at Tarlem Bend. So you don't have to be much of a sleuth, Aaron, to work out that the extra racing that I'll do this year will likely be in a Porsche.
I didn't even need to try sleuthing then. You took us straight to the sleuth door. Well played. Hey, one thing we didn't get to on our last chat was to talk about a category that I know so many of our listeners probably don't get to hear about enough, Formula Ford.
Mm.
So lots to talk about, lots of cool stuff. 97 was the championship winning year for you. So to paint the picture for some of our listeners who might not have been born then.
which is a few.
There's a few. There's yourself, Marcus Ambrose, Todd Kelly, Greg Ritter.
Damien White
was floating around. There was a bunch of familiar faces and names.
I think Dougal was still racing.
Dougal was floating.
Steve Owen had just started. Adam Macro
was floating. He was the champion.
Christian Jones.
Yes, in the blue O-Amps car. Yeah, I remember
Christian
that.
Christian Jones, son of...
From my AJ. Young Motorsport News yes. Formula Ford reporting yeah, days.
There was a few of us.
There was. You won the title yep. in the... Was it the Bunnings car?
It was the Bunnings car for the last three races.
Right.
It was Cresta Curtains and Blinds prior to that.
What was the deal with Cresta Curtains and Blinds?
Know. Someone... We knew someone that worked... Oh, yeah. Okay, I remember now. I was driving for Fastlane Racing, which is the team out of WA that I was actually working for as well. And one of our customers at Fastlane was the national. Well, I think Cresta might have only been Western Australian based, but we're looking to go national. The sales manager for Cresta was one of.
I love these stories.
Was
these
one
cool.
of Fastlane's customers.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So we got. We through him we got some money out of Cresta, and then we ultimately got the Bunnings money for the last three races. So this is how long ago that I raced Formula Ford was, Aaron. That Bunnings was still only WA then. There was no Bunnings warehouse. There was still just a yeah. hardware shop. It was still just effectively your small Mitre 10, if you like, in WA, and they were about to launch Bunnings nationally.
Kind of went pretty well.
So this is Wesfarmers, the parent company. They were about to launch Bunnings nationally, the Bunnings warehouse thing that is now on every shop corner in the world. So one of, again, the Gazzati family, who were big in Formula Ford back then, Gary Gazzati.
Gary, David, Formula Ford, and he drove the Sierra with Steve Ellery.
That's right. And David Gazzati. They were the third biggest customer of Bunnings in Western Australia at the time. So they sort of lent on, and they were part of the Fastlane Racing setup as well. And they lent on Bunnings and said, oh, you guys probably need to sponsor this guy because we spend a heap of money with you. So can you sponsor this guy? And so they sponsored me, and it worked out pretty well because we won the championship. We got a heap of exposure for them because no one on the East Coast had heard of Bunnings before. And then in 98, they launched Bunnings Warehouse. And the first one was at Nunna Wadding on Whitehorse Road in Victoria.
There you go.
We did a car display there. That's how we got the Bunnings sponsorship. So I get a lot of people now that ask me, how do I get sponsorship? And I say, it's all about your network, and it's all about people that you know. And someone that it might not be the person that you know that can sponsor you, but someone that they know might be able to sponsor you. So that's how I got all our sponsorships in Formula Ford.
And that is such a great topic. We've touched on this with a few of our guests on this podcast over the journey. And I like to do that because I think it's great for young drivers, young people working in the industry who might not have the experience, who, you know, it's a bit deer in headlights. And I think a lot of people still are stuck at that. Give me your sticker, I'll put it on the car, give me some money. And it's very rare that, you know, those ones work ever. It's really those sorts of, there's a business deal tied into it. There's, you know, all these sorts of elements. So I love hearing some of these stories from guys like yourself, because it will help younger drivers now flick a switch in their brain of moving away from that kind of, hey, sponsor X, please give me 20 grand.
Yeah, I look, I've got a proposal and I'm cold calling, or I'm sending out them to 100 businesses, you know, cold calling, or sending it out with no connection. I'd imagine it'd be less than 1% of those actually work.
It's about
leveraging your network and opening your network, and that's, you know, that's what I learned really early through. And it wasn't me that was doing it; it was obviously my dad and people within the Formula Ford network in Western Australia that supported me and helped me in that year in 97.
What was the standout moment of winning that? I mean, winning the championship is kind of a standout moment, but along the way, what's the pivotal critical one that maybe our listeners or people don't know, or they've forgotten? Because there's one that sticks in my brain, and I don't want to say it because I don't know if it's the one or not.
I don't reckon it will be the one.
I think you probably can guess.
So for me, it was the Perth round. So we debuted the Bunnings sponsorship in Perth at the Perth round. So there was still Perth, Malala and Oran Park to go in the championship, the final three rounds of the championship. So prior to Perth, my car was yellow and black, Western Australian colours, sponsored by Cresta Curtains and Blinds, and there was a heap of WA sponsors all over it. But then we did the Bunnings deal, and it was massive. We did two cars. My car had been based on the East Coast prior to the Perth round, so it hadn't had a lot of love. So the car came back to Perth, and I rebuilt it because I was working for Fastlane, so I knew what I was doing with the cars. So it was a full chassis up rebuild. So just pulled the whole car apart, sandblasted it, new powder coat, new floor. For those people that have worked on a Formula Ford, know it's a massive job. So anyway, did all that. And then obviously repainted it in the Bunnings colours, shook the car down. Yep, car's all good. Away we go to Perth. Should have been fastest to Perth because I'd done a lap or two around Perth by then. I sort of knew what we were doing. But the pressure of the weekend got to me, and I really was struggling in practice on Friday. Was off the pace, really frustrated, not letting it happen, not letting it flow. And I crashed the car on Friday afternoon. Like crashed it, and it was probably 7 or 8 grand worth of damage, and I knew that the budget was tight, and I was really pissed with myself, and I was really frustrated. And one of my sponsors out of WA was a guy named Gary McCorkle, who had helped us through building a truck, and you know, he is a machinery dealer, and he was a real salt of the earth, old school guy. And he could see, and he raced Formula Ford himself, and he was racing, and he came and saw me, and he goes, oh, geez, Garth, that sucks. That's a bit of bad luck. And I said, yeah, Gaz, I'm pissed because I shouldn't have done it, but I know it's going to cost us a heap of money, and I know that we need that money for Malala, we need that money for Oran Park. And he goes, Garth, you're going to win this championship. Don't worry about that. And he goes, and don't worry about whatever it costs to fix this car, I'm paying for it.
Wow.
So it was not the fact that he paid for it, but it was the fact that he was backing me. Mm. And there was still three rounds to go in the championship, but he was backing me. He was backing me because he said, you are going to win it, but I don't want you thinking about the dollars and cents of it. So don't worry about that. I'm paying for that. Don't worry about it. And it was really from that point forwards, I was like, okay. And that just relieved me of all the pressure that I'd put on myself. Relieved me of all the pressure of performing really badly in Friday practice. I remember working till about 10 o'clock fixing the car, and we went out and it went all right from there on in. So what was your one?
Am I right in remembering that was it that weekend you won a race with a flat tire?
I didn't.
Or a deflating
tire? I didn't win the race. I finished second.
But it was down or going down?
Yeah, it went flat.
Yeah. So kind of got away with one there.
Yeah, because – and there's a backstory to that.
Yeah, we love the backstory.
So we were testing the week prior at Perth, and it poured with rain, like properly poured with rain. And I wasn't driving, but my teammate Brett Burville was, and I was, you know, engineering him, to use that term, for the day. And it was pouring rain, and Burv's like, I want to test in the wet. And I was like, yeah, okay. And it's pouring with rain. And I said, right, I want to do tyre pressures. And what you used to do back in the day was you used to pump the tyres right up. So, for example, that tyre, the tyre pressure would have been 20 psi cold when you roll it out in the dry. But in the wet, you'd probably pump it up to 40 to make it like a balloon so the tyre would cut through the water. And the tyre that we were using then had a really deep groove. It was the Avon tyre. And I said, Boob, I want to let the tyre right down. I want to like run it at like 10 pound and I want to try it. I said, it's testing. There's no one else here. Who cares?
Mm, yes.
So I said, right, we're going to pump it up to 40. You're going to go out and do 5 laps and then you're going to come
in. This is a bit Harry Hog Days of Thunder, isn't it?
You're going to come in.
5 laps my way, 5 laps your way.
You're going to come in and I'm going to let the tyre down to 10 pound and then you're going to go out. And we're going to test it. And we did 10 pound. And it was like 2 seconds a lap faster. and we're like, okay, this is what we're doing when it rains. So luckily we did that test, came and it was pouring with rain. There was this period at Perth Supercar weekends where it rained every weekend, every year for like 5 or 6 years. So anyway, it was pouring with rain. And I'm like, right, I know the trick. So we let the tyre down, 10 pound. And it was great. Like I took off. I was gone. Gone. Like 8 seconds up the road, which never happens
in a Formula Ford race. That's like winning a supercar race happens. By 50 seconds.
So anyway, I was gone. And I was like, yeah, how good is this? Our trick worked. But because we were so low in the tyre pressure that the tyre was actually moving on the bead and it went off the bead a little bit and the tyre went flat. So thankfully at Perth, it was the right front tyre that went flat. And you only need the right front tyre for really one corner. That's the left-hander going up the hill. So I did the last three or four laps with flat right front tyre. And someone got me for first. I can't remember. Oh, was it Todd? Maybe Todd got me. Yeah, it was. Todd got me. And then one of the Perth guys, Kerry Wade, was behind me. And Marcus was way behind Kerry. Marcus was off the pace. And he, by this stage, he was my championship rival. It was he and I battling it out for points. So Kerry's caught me with like a lap and a half to go, and he just sat behind me.
And he's part of Fastlane.
He was like a sort of a customer car at Fastlane. Yeah, right, so right. He's just sat behind me. He could have passed me like 10 times in the last lap and a half. He just sat behind me because he was like, well, Garth needs the points. Mm. So he let me finish second with a flat tyre. And then Marcus, I think, crossed the line fourth, not far behind Kerry and I. So I think Kerry would have gone into formation flying if required, if Marcus got to his to the gearbox of Kerry's car.
Oh, those Western Australians.
Yeah, 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 we were a bit of a mafia back then. Yeah,
it was the same with, I mean, the V8s and the whatever category was, there was the local contingent that we only ever saw on a TV once a year because they raced there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, in the V8s it was Tim Slaker and Barbagallo and Phil Johnson, Grant's dad and all that sort of stuff. So that's a cool story. And that's where we're going to hit the pause button on my chat with 2007 V8 Supercar champ Garth Tander. We sure did cover a lot of ground there. Forthright opinions on current topics and some more opening up in some of the other areas. These are the things that I love chatting about with Garth. There's good news. There's more Formula Ford stories coming in part two, including the time that he and Marcus Ambrose crashed into one another at Phillip Island and what their dad said in the aftermath. That's next time. Go and listen to any episodes in the back catalogue you haven't heard in the meantime, and we'll have part two dropping very soon. I'm Aaron Noonan. Thanks for tuning in. Send us your feedback via the form on our website, and I'll chat with you next time on the V8 Sleuth Podcast, powered by Castrol.
Every lap in under a minute. Every move made to matter. Every decision impacting the outcome of the race. Supercars in Perth. Every second matters. Bosch Power Tools Perth Super Sprint, May 17 to 19. Book now at Ticketek. Supercars. Unforgettable.